Welcome to Mound Talk Podcast, the podcast where we have on professional baseball players to share their experience and journey to the pros. Hey everybody, and welcome to episode 7 of Mound Talk Podcast. Today we have on Brandon Coach, who is a minor league free agent, but was drafted by the Tampa Bay Rays in the 4th round of the 2015 draft. Brandon played college baseball at Dallas Baptist University, and as a sophomore at DBU, he was a semifinalist of the Greg Olson Breakout Player of the Year Award. That season, he posted a .64 ERA with an 8-1 record and 28 appearances. After a few seasons with the Rays, dealing with elbow and shoulder issues on and off, he was released but signed with the Minnesota Twins shortly after in that offseason. In this podcast, we talk about his process of going to college as a two-way player, getting invited to play for Team USA, his draft process, and much more. So let's go ahead and get into it. All right, so we're here with Brandon Coach, and I'll just go ahead and let you tell us about yourself.
Right now, I'm currently a free agent. I got drafted in the fourth round in 2015. I played 3 years at Dallas Baptist, played 5 years with the Rays, and then played my last year with the Twins, which was 2020 COVID year. So not a lot of whole baseball being played, but now I'm a free agent and just like looking to get ready for next season.
All right. So you mentioned that you played at DBU, but you didn't mention your freshman year that you were a two-way. Talk to us a little bit about your recruiting. Was that like a key? Cause I know you started out, you wanted to be a shortstop. Talk to us about your recruiting when like schools would offer, hey, like here's like a pitching spot. Was it one of those it has to be two way? Was it go ahead and go through all that.
Well, I say two way, I went as a two way, but I went to college as a shortstop. That was my number one thing. In high school, I'd play shortstop and then I would get on the mound. I was your typical shortstop closer. I would play mm-hmm. the whole game. And then if we were winning, I would pitch the last inning because I could throw hard. My intention was never to go to school as a pitcher. I didn't think I was a pitcher. I thought I was pretty good at it, but I'd never thought it was going to be my future, in baseball. So as a recruit, I wasn't looking at going to a pitching development school. I just wanted to go to the best school possible. It just seemed like everybody was kind of on the same page with me as once you're as a shortstop. Cause I was a good high school player. I wasn't phenomenal. I wasn't a first rounder, but I was a good high school player. I could definitely pass the naked eye test, to college recruiters. So that's really how it started.
So when was it, once you got to DBU, it was pretty quick that you were moved to a pitcher, wasn't it?
Well, it wasn't my doing. It was more of my coach's doing. But you think that the transition from high school to college is going to be easy. And it was really, really crazy how fast the game sped up. Mm-hmm. And I just I wasn't ready for it. I wasn't ready for the game to speed up that much on me. And my fall, it didn't go bad. I thought I played pretty well, but I started pitching more and more, and in myself, I was man, I think I got something here. And it pitching was a whole lot more, it just was more fulfilling than hitting because for me at that time, there was less failure with it. And it just seemed every day playing shortstop, I was hitting a wall with either my coaches or with myself, I was I don't know why this is so hard now. Mm-hmm. So it kind of transitioned after the fall. Coaches pulled me in and were hey, why don't you focus on pitching in the spring, and then we'll kind of reevaluate. And I mean, by no means did I pitch well, but I definitely had some spurts where I was I might be pretty good at this.
Yeah. So you ended up being closer. I know your last year, your freshman year, were you just in the bullpen?
Yeah. So I was your typical, just middle of the range. I throw one or two innings. Usually it was usually my first inning was always pretty good. And the second inning came around and I kind of fell apart. But the time I was I got this was when I pitched against OU and they were ranked top 10.
Yeah.
And I went two innings. I think I had four strikeouts against one of the best lineups OU's ever had. So, that's where I got my confidence from. I ended up having a 7.5 on the year, but struck out more people than innings pitched. Like, I think that's where it like kind of came from. And then going into my sophomore year, I was like another bullpen guy, and then transitioned into being a closer at the end of the year.
And that was a pretty stacked team, like even pitching wise, wasn't it? I want to say there was, you know, like three guys at least.
My freshman year, we had a first rounder. First or second rounder, he was Jake Johansson. He was like 97, 100. So like, I mean, I was playing with guys that were like, that were really, really good.
Yeah.
And then our sophomore year, one of our starters ended up pitching the big leagues. Another one was, I mean, you could look at our entire team and like almost every guy played pro ball at some point.
Yeah. That's what I want to say. I want to say like, I see like, oh, this guy ended up going to DBU and like he's in pro, and it's like, oh shoot. Like that was like the same time zone as all these others.
It's crazy how it's crazy how small of a circle it is, but like,
yeah,
you look around and, you know, I'm like looking at our 2015 team and like the guys that either signed or got drafted, or there's like one guy that's not playing still. Wow. And that's, I mean, it's 2020 and that's 2015. That's 5 years.
Yeah.
Most guys get canned after 1-2 years, even if they're pretty good. Mm-hmm. But like, that says something about DBU guys in general that like, yeah, they can are continue playing.
So on that, you're back to your freshman year. You're just like, you said you had experience in high school pitching, but you didn't like ever pitch actually. So was it nice having like a handful of, you know, now to see like pro guys helping you transition and helping you like learn, okay, like, yeah, I've thrown the ball in high school, but like now I'm pitching. Was that easy to have those guys pick their brains?
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, even guys that aren't playing pro ball, like you always want to learn from like somebody that's older than you, because like my biggest thing is like just picking up like one or two things from like one person. And like, I think that's like the easiest way to like grow, because like you can pick and choose what works and what doesn't and what you like and what you don't like. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's guys I play with now, and there's like college guys that are there now that I around and work around, and I just, you know, I like to observe, I like to see what they're doing, and like, you know, there's a reason behind what they're doing, obviously, right? So like I get to watch like their process because I was in that process at one point.
Yeah.
And so like it just everything comes full circle at some point.
So at what point in your college career did you kind of have like an idea of like this might not be done after college?
Well, I think, so I went into my sophomore year and I was, like, I pitched really well. Like I had a really, really good year. And then I ended up getting into tryout for Team USA at that point. So okay, we were all, it was after a weekend series. I was on a Sunday, and, our coaches were like, you know, Brandon's going to try out for Team USA this summer. And I was like signed to the Northwoods. Like that wasn't even on my radar. And I was like, mm-hmm, oh, maybe, like, I was like, maybe I could go to the Cape. Like maybe I could go pitch in the Cape. Like maybe I'm good enough. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
there was a little doubt in my mind. I was like, you know, I don't know if I'm like at that level yet. And then once I got there, I was like, I walked in the hotel and like, there's Alex Bregman. There's like Tyler Jay, who was a first rounder, DJ Stewart, who's in the big leagues with the Orioles, like, Zach Collins, Kevin Newman, starting shortstop for the Pirates. Like,
I want to say like that 2015 like era of college baseball. I mean, I guess it's just because time's told, but like, dude, that was an elite like just college year.
I mean, just looking back at it, I'm like, I was playing summer baseball with six people in the stands against a like, what, the Coastal Plains League like all-star team, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm, they came over and played us, and I'm like, I look back and like my first outing didn't grow great, but I look back and I'm like, Alex Bregman's playing shortstop, and it's like, yeah, he's the best shortstop in college baseball. So like, you know, he's one of my good buddies now, so it's just like, it's crazy to like look back and be like, man, I like played with those guys. And I think that was like my turning point. I was like, man, I think I could do something with this.
Yeah. So once you had that, when did like, you know, agents and pro teams start getting in contact with you?
Man, it was weird because like I had an advisor in high school. And like, his name was Billy Martin. Like he was just kind of like a friend that like somebody like hooked us up with. And like, I had him going into college, but I didn't even know, mm-hmm, what it meant. And then I ended up like just parting ways with him because I was like, I don't need this.
Yeah.
And then after I went to Team USA, was, I was getting phone calls in my room, from like, there's agencies you never heard about that were calling me. And I was just like, I don't know what's going on. They like have my room number for some reason, like,
wow,
like crazy stuff. But I ended up, signing with, they were Elevate at the time. It was Jim Schwanke, who is, I played with his son, Willie Schwanke, who ended up, he went to Wichita State, but he's a good friend. Like I played with him when I was like 8 years old. So, but they had a good thing going and I trusted him. So that's kind of what I went with.
And then, so you said that was still like that sophomore year with Team USA is when you started to like get,
it was like contacts. Sophomore year. Yeah. Sophomore year going into junior year.
All right. So junior year, no, I didn't even look up the stats and all, but y'all had a great year as a team and personally, didn't you?
Yeah. I mean, like, I think we won the most games ever in the history of the program. I think we had the least amount of losses. And like the big thing for us was like hosting the regional. I think you could ask anybody that was there 2015, like what was the highlight? And it's like, it's hosting a regional with like, I mean, we had Oregon State, Texas, and like VCU ended up like being really, really good.
Did y'all play Oregon State?
Played Oregon State, beat them. I think we beat them. I don't remember the score, but I just remember Sean Stutzman pitched like lights out. And then Drew Smith, who's in the big leagues with the Mets now, came in and pitched against them and just like made them look silly.
That's a, that's an elite college team too that year.
Oh yeah. They were, I mean, they should have been a, like, I guess they had reasons to be a national seed at some point. So, but yeah. We saw it and we're all like, why is Oregon State coming to Dallas? Like, like give them like UCLA or something. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Give them somebody on that side.
Yeah, definitely. So, okay. So, you know, that college season ends. What's after your college season? What's that look like, you know, leading up to the draft?
So it was a lot of phone calls. It was like, I mean, I was talking to my agent every day because, you know, there was a chance, you know, we were all talking. I was like, you know, maybe I slip into the first day. I was like, maybe second round. Maybe I slip into like a money saver pick in the first. Right. So there's a lot of talk around that. A lot of teams calling, asking questions. We had meetings and stuff with like scouts. So like, there'd be like, you know, it'd be you and there'd be like five scouts and they would just like, it's almost like an open forum. So they just ask you like crazy questions, like the most ridiculous questions you'd ever heard. What's one time like you like weren't enough or like you failed. And I'm just like, I'm not going to tell you about my failures. Like next question kind of thing. You know what I mean? I think the craziest question I got was this guy, I think it was, he said, who are you going to sign with? And I was like, whoever calls me first, I don't know. Like what,
yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like that's such an open-ended question. I think you're just like, they're like looking for like whatever they can like take back to their boss and like tell them. So
I want to know some of the, like a highlight reel of the craziest questions. Cause I heard this, I can't even think of the name, but it was like a Rockies guy say, this team asked him like, what would he be doing if it wasn't for baseball? Like, you know, if he didn't get signed pro, he's like, oh, I'd probably do construction. I really like that or something. And they were like, so are you interested? And he's like, well, I really like construction. Like he just completely like ignored baseball. And he was like, short story, I didn't get signed. And it's like the amount of like crazy questions that really affect it. It's like, wow.
Well, you know, I think it's like, they're just trying to figure out like where your dedication lies. Like, I get it. Like, I understand like the job they have to do. Do I think it's like right to ask like a 20 and 21 year olds like questions like that? No, I think that's a little like off base. But I mean, like I think the craziest question I got, and it's like one of the only ones I remember, was he was like, what's going to keep you from like making the big leagues? And I think, I don't remember who asked it, but I looked him dead in the eye and said, the team telling me they're not going to move me up.
I mean, like, just that's like the only way you can answer it.
Yeah. It's like, what else do you say? You know what I mean? And like nobody knows the right answers for those. Like the scouts don't even know the right answers. All they do is write it down and then like take it to their boss, you know? Yeah. So it's like, I don't know. A lot of questions about like, what's your number, how much you want to sign for.
Mm-hmm. So and like, it has those questions have its place, but like we had Mike Pasco on a few days ago or a few episodes ago. And he was just saying like,
guy's one of those stud, like, stud, by the way,
dude,
guy's
he's a beast. Stud. And he's absolute a
flamethrower.
I'm calling it a big year for him. But he was saying that, like, you know, it's one of those things, like, they got to ask all these questions to see how committed. Because, I mean, like, even you know, I mean, obviously, you know, but, like, you know, say, what, like, 12-hour days And then like at the end of the week, you get like, you know, a couple dollars pity check. And so mm-hmm. it's like, you got to be invested to put in like, say what average of 4 to 6 years in the minors of, you know, just nothing. That's like, if everything goes right, you know, no injuries or anything. Yeah.
No, you're 100% right.
4 years of pretty much not making any money just to see if you have a chance. And so, I mean, they make sense, but it's like, they have some crazy stuff that they bring out, and it's a lot harder than people see just, oh, this guy got signed.
Well, I think it's like, too, you like look at it and you're like, okay, if this guy's not like, let's look at it. Like if a guy's not a top 10 pick, right. Or a mm-hmm. top like 10 round pick. So they're probably not making 100K. And if they are making 100K, that's the absolute maximum they're going to get.
That's a high school team guys.
Yeah. Without like a team going over. So like, are you really worried about that with like your guys from round 1 through 5, like those guys at the bottom are probably making like 250, right?
Mm-hmm.
Unless it's like a college senior sign. So yeah, it like makes sense. Cause you're like, we don't want to give a kid, like say it's like a kid, like, I don't know, like some high school senior from like Highland Park right now. Like they're not going to just give like a kid they know nothing about 100K and say, here, come play for the, I don't know, Texas Rangers. Right.
Yeah.
So it's like you have to get to know them as a person, because like they're like, one, it's like scout's job. Like if that guy gets drafted, like that's that scout's guy. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So like the Rays guy, when they drafted me, like I was his guy, and like, he was checking in with me and stuff, because like, if I made the big leagues on hit, like because of him, like, cause he drafted me technically, like you could say that.
Credit.
It's credit to him. Cause it's like, okay, I picked a big leaguer. Like, let me, you know, gives him leverage for later on. Right. But like, if you get, you know, the Rangers area scout, and he just drafted all these kids from Arlington, Highland Park, all these places, and he doesn't get to know them, and they go into pro ball, and they're like, you know, they're like knuckleheads. They like get in trouble a lot. And then they're mm-hmm. out after a year. That looks bad on him. So like, they have to ask the crazy questions, cause they got to figure out who you are as a person.
So how involved were you with like your, you know, like you said, your number, like the amount of money you were looking for, was that like, did you have any part of that, or was it just your agent?
No, dude, I just wanted to play. Like, mm-hmm. I was like, I just wanted to, like, my biggest thing was I just wanted it to be fair. I didn't want to get screwed, which nobody wants to get screwed in pro ball.
Yeah.
It is a money game. It's 100% a money game, but you also like, you got to want to be in it too. And I think my thing was, is like, you know what, like from the time I started talking to scouts, I was like, if I'm a first rounder, I want first round money. If I'm a fourth rounder, give me fourth round money. If I'm an 18th rounder, give me what you think I'm worth in the 18th. You know what I mean? So like, I think that's where it comes down to. And like, some guys can have like a different idea of like, oh, I want this, or I'm not going. It's like, mm-hmm. I had the different, like, I knew that that was my chance to like play pro ball. Like, that's definitely what I wanted to do. I wanted to play pro ball, and I want to go to the big leagues. And like the money's nice. I'm not saying it's not nice. It's great. And like, I was very fortunate to go as high as I did.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, my mindset going into it was like, I just like, just be fair.
Definitely. Yeah. I want to know how much like that does. Like, I know with first round guys, you know, and especially high school, that's a huge deal, but I want to know how often like teams will pass on a guy, say fifth round on, just because of the money.
I mean, like, it's hard to say, because like, you don't know what teams are thinking, and like teams with deeper pockets have like more, like less to risk than like a team like the Rays. Like a Ray, you know, like say like a small market team, like they're not going to go after a guy that wants, if he's a 10th round talent, but he wants 2 million,
mm-hmm.
like they're not going to go after a guy that wants 10, like 2 million in the 10th round, because he's not, he's not a $2 million player. Right. So I think it's, I think it's really all about like, you know, what they see and like where they see you could go. And like, it's all about development.
Yeah. So were the Rays one of the top teams, like just talking to you before the draft, or was it one of those?
I never really talked to the Rays per se. I do remember that their like scouting director was at like our first game.
Mm-hmm.
And like the first game was like, I mean, probably one of my best games of the year. Like I just like, first game jitters, like you feel really good.
Yeah.
So there was that. But like, no, I mean, I didn't really talk to teams. It was my agent. So like, I'm sure I was in the mix with a lot of people, but it was like, my thing was, is like, I didn't want to worry about it during the season. I mean, I got the questionnaires and stuff, but like, I was like, you know, you handle it. kind of thing.
Yeah.
They did a good job. Like I really didn't have to worry about it that much.
So once you got drafted, signed, all that, what was the transition playing wise from like, you know, a big college season with like some standout teams, players, to now, what was it? Did you go to Arizona or Florida League, or did you go short season?
I went to the Penn League, so in New York.
Okay. So what was like the transition like?
Man, it was cool. I went down, so I got drafted and then went down to Florida to do my physical and stuff. So I did like a bunch of MRIs on my elbow, MRIs on my shoulder. I saw the team doctor. I like went to the game. It was, you know, it was just like that typical draft. It was almost like they were giving me like a first round experience as a fourth rounder. So like that was pretty cool. Like I thought that was great. But then, you know, I was sitting down with everybody at lunch the day of signing, and they were like, all right, you're gonna go to the Penn League and, you know, go up there. So went back to Texas, grabbed my bags and flew up to New York. And I mean, I got lucky because Hudson Valley is like one of the greatest places ever to play baseball. It's so sad that they're not going to have it there. They're not going to have minor league baseball anymore, but it was one of the coolest places to play. I mean, we got 6,000 to 8,000 people every single night.
Wow.
And the Penn League, that's crazy because there was other places you would play. A battery went down. There's other places that you'd play and there'd be 15 people in the stands. Like crazy stuff, bro. Crazy.
So that MRI, is that stuff like everyone, or like you said, first round experience, or is that like every draft?
You know, pitcher? I'm not really sure. Cause like nobody really, I don't know any, like I never really talked much to people that like had that. Cause I was like, I'd talk to people and be like, yeah, I'm going to Florida, like to Tampa to, you know, do all this. They're like, oh, that's weird. I didn't have to do that. You know what I mean? So like, I think they were just like covering their bases with that.
That's what broke R.A. Dickey when he got drafted. Oh really? I don't know. Yeah. He has a book on it. He got drafted by, I think it was the Rangers, huge signing bonus. The MRI showed he had like no UCL at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so he ended up like taking like a minimum offer or whatever it was, but yeah, that like changed his career. But that was cool. Like seeing that, like, they still do all the MRIs for all the pitchers, or at least like for a handful.
Well, I think I know a couple of guys that have had that, like where they, I won't say any names, but like there's been some guys that have like gotten MRIs and like they end up being not good. They've signed for way less than they're supposed to.
And that's horrible. I mean, it's like, I guess some of them, it could be like, you know, a ticking time bomb. And then some of them, like it might be like they've played like 10 years like that. Yeah. So
and like, I mean, for that, like with that too, it's like, if a guy's good enough to get drafted with it, it's like, if he's not hurt, then like, there's really no, cause like an MRI is only going to show what's wrong. Like, it's not going to show like how healthy, cause like you can go in there with a bunch of scar tissue. It's going to show your scar tissue. And like, we play a sport that's like not made to be played overhead. So like, guys are going to have issues. Especially guys that throw hard. Young kids that throw hard are always going to have, like, you're going to see something. It's not going to be clean.
More wear, yeah. And it's one of those things, like, you know, is there a way around, like, just kind of writing this dude off because he has, like, a signal in his UCL? Like, you know, is that just, like, you know, here's a little extra warm-up stuff. You have, like, specific therapy-type stuff for it. But so back to you. Once you know, you're going out, you're in New York. What is it like with your agent, the talks with your agent there, as in like, you know, getting your gear for the season, your gloves?
For me, it's like, I think it's across the board, but like, I think your agent's allowed to spend $2,000 on you a year for like gear. Okay. So I got there and I was like, you know, my cleats from college were trashed. So I needed, you know, I just like got a few cleats that I thought I liked, like some New Balance and Nikes. And that year I was just like, you don't need much, right? Like I just need like some workout shoes. So you just like, for me, I was just like, I was in direct contact with them. So I text them, shoot them a picture, say, hey, like I need these in the size 12. And they'd be there like, you know, a week later.
Yeah. So it's not just like what it looks like where your agent just sends you a box of random stuff. It's more, you know, I never heard about that like dollar limit. So you just kind of like say, hey, like I need like 3 pairs of cleats a season, maybe like 6 or whatever you want. And then 2 pairs of workout shoes and that's it or whatever. And like,
well, they just hook you up. Yeah. I mean, like it's very rare when an agent is going to spend their money just like to give you stuff that they don't even know if you want it or not. Right.
Yeah.
So like a lot of agencies have equipment guys, like the agency I'm with now has an equipment guy. So, you know, you just shoot them over a text and say like, hey, I need this. And it's, you know, for me, it was in my locker when I got to spring training this year.
Wow. I never knew that part.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, they take care of you. Like you're with the right people. They take care of you. You know, they're investing in you so you can go out on the field and not have to worry about any of that stuff.
So glove deals, you were with Wilson your first few years. What was that like?
It was cool. I was a Rawlings guy in college, which I loved Rawlings. But Wilson came to me my first year in the Florida State League and, were willing to give me, you know, they came there and said, hey, we really like you. You know, here's like, you know, here's our offer. It was like two, I think it was like two stock gloves a year, which is, you know, that's when the Wilson truck comes and you get to pick gloves off the truck. Mm-hmm. But it was, they also gave me like $500 in like merch money, which was pretty cool. And I think it was either like on their website, which is like, I mean, who's going to like, are you going to spend $500 on Wilson gear? Right.
Yeah.
So I think I ended up just getting like a custom glove. So I ended up getting like three gloves a year.
Wow.
And then my second year, it went to 1,000. So I ended up getting two stock gloves and two custom gloves. Cause like, I mean, I'm not going to wear a Wilson shirt. You know what I mean? Like I'm not going to wear an A2000 hat. So I just like, I would get, you know, the gloves that I wanted.
Yeah. So is that a, you know, was that like a contract like deal or just kind of like, hey, just, let's just do this.
It was a contract. So like it was, I signed the deal for 2 years and then I re-signed with them for another year after that 2 years was up.
And was there anything like if you wore Rawlings, like you would get dropped or anything like that?
You know, I never had that conversation. I don't think I ever had to have that conversation. But like me being me, I like to trade gloves. So like I would get like two stock gloves in spring training and I would just like, if I saw somebody else's glove that I liked or it was like one of my good buddies, you know what I mean? Like Ian Jabeau, who pitched in the big leagues for the Rangers, like I gave him one of my stock Wilsons and he gave me like one of his like custom gloves, you know what I mean? Cause he was a Rawlings guy. And that's mainly just so I can get, like I could put something on my mantle, like when I'm done playing, like I got, I've got like Drew Smith's glove. I've got Jabeau's. I got one of my buddies from college, his catcher's mitt. Like I've got quite a few of like my buddy's gloves that are going to look really good later on.
That's awesome. So, you know, you spent your time with the Rays, you said 5 years. And then, so I can't remember, when was it that you had Tommy John? Was it like, it was like your last year?
Yeah. I've had like a crazy, crazy, story. So it's, like I got hurt, in 2016 in my first year and I had like a partial tear. So like went into that, sat out the rest of the year. I think I pitched 2 months in that season, sat out the rest of the year. They like rehabbed me, said like, I was good. I pitched an instructs like through. Okay. And then came back. I was like ready to go the next spring training, felt good. And then my first game in spring training, I like felt another pop. And it ended up actually being a stress reaction in my elbow. So, and it was, they said there was no damage to the UCL, no extra damage, but I had like some, signaling on like that olecranon bone, which is like the bottom of your elbow. It's actually the bone that your UCL is screwed into or like tied into. So like that happened. I had to rehab the entire year that year and then came back in, what was it, 18? Came back in 18 and sat out the first month of spring training. Came back, felt good. Velo was good. I was like, you know, back up to 95, 96. I was like, man, I'm back. And then like a month of pitching in the Florida State League, I was like feeling really, really good. And then my shoulder started flaring up and I was like, I've never had shoulder problems. And then like I sat out, like I think I was on the DL for like a week just to like let it chill out. And then like 2 weeks after that, my elbow like popped again and I ended up tearing it completely. So I think my shoulder issue was because I was compensating for my elbow being all messed up. But I was pitching good though.
I mean, at least you had some track record for it.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, I thought it was, for me, it was inevitable. It was going to happen at some point. I tried to grind through it as much as I could, but, you know, and I ended up needing TJ. So
So you went through your, the end of your TJ rehab was with the Twins, right? I want to say you were at spring training this year.
So I went to spring training this year with the Twins, but my, so I rehabbed the rest of 18. So I had surgery in June of 2018 and then rehabbed all the rest of that year and then went into 19 rehabbing with the Rays. So then I was rehabbing TJ, started throwing and stuff. And then I got released by the Rays like 3 days before my first bullpen from TJ. So, you know, just, it was a tough situation. Like I, it was, it definitely put me in a really bad spot. Like I was like, what do I do now? So I ended up going home, went to TMI with the Meister, who is one of the best doctors in the, like you could find. And, got on his program, rehabbed with him. Then threw for, got to the point where I felt like I was like, I felt good, threw for teams. I had like a workout with like 10 teams and I got signed like 4 days later and I was up and I was out to spring training with the Twins.
So you were, you know, like fully cleared when you went to spring training?
Yeah, no, I was ready to go.
Okay. Awesome. So I didn't know that. I thought it was a little into that you were still doing your rehab. So what was it like, you know, when you were talking with the Twins, what was it like? I mean, were they like, hey, like your rehab, we're not sure what's going on. Or was it just like, okay, like looks like you're good. You feel good. You're cleared.
Yeah. I mean, like there was like, I had a clean bill of health from Meister. So like I made sure to go in and like, he was like, he's cleared, like write it down, like ready to go game action, blah, blah, blah. Right. Mm-hmm. I finished their bullpen protocol. So like, I didn't need to like explain to the Twins, like what was going on. Like they had a clean bill of health from my doctor saying like, I was ready to go. I was healthy. And then like, that's when I went in and threw like the bullpen and I was healthy. And I was like, I threw a really, really good bullpen. Velo is good, everything. So like that, I think that set like a good, like set me up good for signing with a team like a week later.
So I know during this shutdown, you've had some personal news, but what was it like at first with, you know, just figuring out training and all that as soon as everything got sent home or everyone got sent home and shut down?
Yeah. I mean, like, sorry, I'm grabbing my charger. Yeah, it was just like the training part is the crazy part because like I didn't know what to do. So like it was my first season back healthy. I was like ready to go. And then like I pitched in my first spring training game, pitched in my first big league game. And I like felt really good. And then I pitched in my second big league game. I'm feeling even better. And I'm like, man, I'm making a team. Like I'm setting myself up really well. And then boom, like they call us in, they're like, coronavirus, gotta go home. And I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. Yeah. So tough. But I ended up just doing the same thing, man. I was like, just like stuck around Florida. We have a condo down to Fort Myers. My family does. So, or it's not Fort Myers. It's Punta Gorda. It's actually like right next to the Rays place. But I found a gym to work out there when everything was shut down. So I was working out there and then lifting and just kept throwing, waiting for a call, waiting for them to be like, hey, let's go. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I was just like, I don't know what to do. I think it was the same thing with everybody. I'm like, I don't think anybody really knew what to do at that point. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And especially at the beginning when it was like, you know, I guess about 3 months worth of like everything being shut down. So like, you know, a few pro guys have like their connections to a gym that can open for them, but it was like, everyone was just trying to figure out what can I do?
Yeah. I mean like, so I was working out at home. My wife is she was a coach at a CrossFit gym. So like we would just go in there, which was cool. Like I would go in there by myself because they weren't allowed to open the gym for anybody. Mm-hmm. So I would do that. I would like throw, I was like at a little league field, like right down the street. And I would like literally throw it into a chain link fence. Like I have like this brand new bag of like spring training balls.
Oh,
and I'm just like ruining them, throwing it into a chain link fence. But I was like, I got to keep going. I was like, I can't stop. Especially me, I was like, I can't stop throwing. Like I'm finally healthy, you know, can't. So for me, it was just like, just literally do whatever I could possibly could just like stay ready.
So outside of baseball, what, you know, do you have any big hobbies or passions that you kept busy with during the COVID shutdown?
Oh man, I think all I did was play Call of Duty. my buddies always play together, and like we don't as much anymore because like everybody's got their own lives now. But like, mm-hmm. I mean, when you have nothing to do, it's like, yeah. What do I do? It's like, okay, I'm gonna go home and play COD all day. Mm-hmm. So that was pretty much it. Play COD, hang out with my wife, watch TV, watch like, I think I watched Game of Thrones like 2 times over. Like every possible show you could ever think of like rewatching, yeah. I probably rewatched it. So,
but it seems like it was a great time because you've got a baby on the way now too. You got to,
yeah, yeah. We almost made it. We almost made quarantine without making a kid. So I was back in Texas when things started to open up, and I was there for like a month while my wife was still working in Florida. So then I like went and visited her, like went down and was there for like a month. And then I came like the very like last week of my trip, she was like, we're pregnant. And I was like, oh, we almost made it. But no, I mean, we're super excited. We're having a little girl. So we're fired up, man. It's going to be sick. She's going to be the first big league, girl to ever play. So,
when is she due?
May 31st right now, but that okay. could change. I think the doctor, they're like basing it off of like the size right now. So we have another appointment, coming up in about 2 weeks. So it's exciting yeah. times, man.
I was gonna say, are you getting ready? You're, getting all this stuff for the house.
Yeah. I mean, like right now we're like renovating, trying to paint, but, my wife's got like a good idea for what she wants to do for the nursery. So I'm just gonna like, let her do her thing. So, yeah. I tell me where to go and what to do and I'll be there. But, nah, man, we're excited. It's going to be sick.
Congratulations to you on that.
Thanks, man.
So with this, I guess from now going forward, what are your, have you talked to any teams yet, or, you know, what's going on with that?
Yeah. I mean, I'm working on it. You know, it's not black and white with right now. I think the biggest issue is like nobody really knows what's going to happen next year. I don't think anybody knows if spring training is going to start on time.
Yeah.
I've talked to teams, like I won't lie about that, but like, has it been super encouraging? I mean, somewhat, you know, but it's like, what do? You know, you just got to stick with the grind and like, just keep going and just like wait until, you know, you get another opportunity. I think that's like all I'm looking for is just another opportunity to keep playing, you know? So,
and it seems like, I mean, at least, your spring training helps, you know, boost that as in, hey, like I'm healthy now. And like, you know, here's the little bit I've done so far since I've been healthy.
Yeah, for sure. And I think like, you know, that's all you can do. It's like, you know, prove that you're healthy. And for me, it's, like, I'm probably gonna have to do some workouts and stuff for teams. And I think at this point, I think I'm ready for it. Like I've prepared myself. I worked hard. Like it's, you know, it's, everybody, it's everything rings true. It's like you leave everything out in the field and, you know, no regrets really. I mean, it's like super cliche, but like, I don't like at the end of this year, if I get signed, if I don't get signed, like I left everything out there. Like I did everything I could possibly do to like put myself in a good position.
Definitely. So for the last question of this episode, who would you say, so two questions, I guess. Who would you say is the greatest pitcher of all time? And then who is your favorite?
Oh, greatest pitcher of all time. I don't know, dude. Roger Clemens is pretty good, bro.
That's who I would say.
No, I mean, there. I feel like there's a lot, man. That like, for me, like I didn't pay attention to pitchers when I was growing up. I was paying attention to hitters.
Yeah.
And, like one of the favorite hitters was like Mark McGwire. Barry Bonds, big steroid guy over here. I don't know what
it yeah.
was. I didn't realize it when I was like 8 years old. And I'm like, I love Mark McGwire, but like, you know, I just, you know, you love greatness, right? So
yeah.
Barry Bonds is one of the best to ever do it. Mark McGwire, that 70 home run season was one of the coolest things to ever happen in sports.
Mm-hmm.
But man, like I loved watching Randy Johnson pitch. Justin Verlander's really fun to watch pitch. I think like now too, you can just like, a lot of guys do things differently too. So
yeah,
I think it's just fun watching those guys. You watch like high spin guys versus sinker ballers and like all that, you know what I mean? So that's pretty cool. But man, I think my favorite pitcher, go ahead. I think my favorite pitcher is probably Drew Smith. Cause he's my best friend. So,
oh gosh.
I got his jersey. I got his jersey in my closet. I need him to get it signed, but no, he's like, it's really cool, like watching a guy you grew up with and like you played with, like go out and like pitch in the big leagues and have success. And like, I think, you know, it's just like, I love watching him like go out there and like compete.
And y'all went through TJ about the same time too, right?
Yeah. I mean, like I was like kind of on the back end of my TJ and I was like just now getting it. I drove over to West Palm just to like take care of him for a couple of days. Like we went to the mall. I was just like, let's go do something. Like you need to get out of the house. And he's like in a sling. And I'm like, my elbow is like not straightened because like, I'm still like trying to work that stuff out. I'm like in the middle of my rehab. He's like just had it. But yeah, I mean, we got to go through that together, which was pretty cool.
That's awesome. I'm pumped to hear you say Roger Clemens. That's was it public speaking? I had an argument essay and I was like, dude, I'm putting Roger Clemens belongs in the Hall of Fame. That's who my favorite is. And I think without the controversy on if he did steroids, no doubt he has like the best stats.
No, I mean, like that's the thing too, is like I don't think baseball writers should be like a judge of character. You know what I mean? Like, I think you judge stats and I think you judge greatness. And I'm like, so like, those are some of the best to ever do it. Like whether the controversy or not, like they're like, they went out and competed every day. So exactly. I mean, some people have different opinions about it, but like, you know, that it wasn't our time, you know, it wasn't 2020. Mm-hmm. Things were different back then.
And it's like, yeah, it's just one of those, like, you never have proof that he did it anyways. So like, why are you judging him on saying he did it if you've never had 100% positive information?
Hey, judge him by the product they put on the field. I think that's the biggest thing you can do.
Man, I want to see him in the Hall of Fame. That's my,
Hey, he's a great dude too. I was down in Sugar Land when they were doing that league down here and he's awesome. So
were you playing in that?
Yeah, I had played with it for a couple weeks and then I went back home.
Team was stacked.
Yeah. Got his two kids playing first and second. And then like, I mean, there's some really good play. I mean, I think their catcher was like a big leaguer at one point. There's a lot of big leaguers in that league, dude. It was cool.
And it's not just like his kids playing first and second. They're both playing professionally too.
Oh, they're nasty. They're really good. And Cody's gross and Casey's really good too. So.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, I wanted to thank you for coming on.
Yeah, absolutely, bro.
Thank you to everyone who tuned in to this episode of Mound Talk Podcast. To find Brandon Coach, you can find him on Instagram at Brandon Coach, KOCH. And to find us, Mound Talk Podcast, you can find us on all streaming services, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter at Mound Talk Podcast. Thanks again, guys.